Okay, welcome back. If you're living in Las Vegas, you're probably seeing, well, we're seeing a little bit from the outside here, a lot of change going on inside that town. People are really up against a wall. I don't know how many are leaving. And yet I did see a story the other day that suggested people were actually moving there, still from Southern California especially, to get away from Southern California. Because the prices, there are so many homes for sale in Las Vegas, the prices are still accessible. Now, these are people who would obviously be able to transfer wealth in with them so they wouldn't have to worry about getting a job, of which there are fewer and fewer in Las Vegas all the time. A major hotel casino has shuttered recently. More are obviously going to happen. We did talk about that with Gary Holland about a week ago, but there's much more going on in the world than Las Vegas, although I do look at it as a microcosm of things to come. I really do, and I think that's what's going to happen. But first, let's say hello to Gary. Welcome back. How are you?
How's it going this evening, Jeff?
Just like it was the last time you said that.
Fabulous.
Thank you for asking. It's, you know, I'm glad to be here. I think that's the best thing I can say. I'm glad to still be here. I'm glad to be able to help people understand. I'm glad to be able to help myself understand how this thing is being pulled off. And it is being done by the very most evil mechanisms and people on the planet. And this is, in many ways, the planet evil, planet Zion, if you will. There are not benign, enlightened people with their hands on the controls at this point. And that's the hardest thing for most people to really try and accept and understand. It's not a good situation out there.
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, the psychopathic behavior is only increasing. It's not decreasing. It's like a standstill at the OK Corral right now when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, that's crazy. And
they're itching for more attacks, obviously.
Of course, you bet.
And And so that's the main goal for them is to get the war started going. Although there's been multiple reports now that we're literally running out of missiles completely, but heck, you know, we'll just, I guess, go pull out the old ordnance from World War II.
Well, we've given it all to the, we've given most all of our missiles to the Jewish state. They've been happy to go through thousands upon thousands of interceptors. No problem. they keep asking for more. And for some strange reason, the government keeps complying. Isn't that odd? All right, here's a little quickie. Let's take a listen to this. There's a book out that is the title of a YouTube video here. I wanted to listen to it with you because it's an interesting little story. It's an AI production, AI actor, some black guy, AI voice, AI script. But it's apparently an interesting and very provocative book. Let's take a listen here.
In the year 2000, a 21-year-old middle school dropout named Eliezer Yudkowsky set out to build machines smarter than any human being who had ever lived. By 2003, he was convinced that if anyone succeeded at doing so, everyone on Earth would die. Recently, he and a colleague, Nate Swories, wrote a book, and it got some attention.
This book, which I commend to everyone,
your book is not called If Anyone Builds It. There is a 1 to 4% chance everybody dies.
If someone builds it, everyone dies.
The book is, If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies.
It's not just about artificial intelligence. It's specifically about superintelligence.
Former national security advisors for the White House, tech founders, the Turing Award-winning godfather of AI, a lot of people read this book. A lot of experts read this book and take it seriously, along with the threat of human extinction from AI.
The worst case scenario is human extinction.
The book contains this almost uncomfortably straightforward argument. And it also contains a short story. Not a prediction, but an example scenario of how things could go very, very wrong. I want to take you through that story. And along the way, I want to go through each step of that argument in more detail. And then I want to talk about whether we should believe it.
Okay, that's, you get the idea. There are some interesting books out there. This one has particularly caught people's attention. I would submit that we don't need advanced superintelligence or even rudimentary superintelligence to wipe out all people. Who is behind the SARS-2 creation, a.k.a. COVID-19? It wasn't AI, it was us. Ralph Baric, etc., promulgated by Tony Fauci, President Trump, take this beautiful, beautiful vaccine, etc. And I feel so sorry for the people who took it. They didn't have a chance. Some people call them stupid, dumb, whatever, but when you have a captive audience and you can program them to think, how do you hold them accountable for their behavior? That's always been something that bothered me. You don't. You can't. They didn't have a chance. They were brainwashed. They were stampeded by fear into taking these shots. And I went into a CVS, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I asked one of the clerks at the pharmacy. I just stopped by, walked over there. I said, "Hi, are you still giving out COVID-19 vaccinations?" "Oh, yes." "Well, about how many a day now?" "Oh, maybe 60. 60 a day at one pharmacy. That's just an idea. So people, once they are brainwashed into believing the government is going to protect and save them, and once they buy into this horribly fatal lie, this global effort to reduce the human population by at least half, how do you blame them for being, quote, unquote, dumb when they've been set up? I don't. I've never blamed them. I blame those dark, evil souls who have put this together. Go ahead.
Yeah, the communists have a term for them type of people. They're called useful idiots, because that's what they are. They're useful and they're idiotic.
And they're programmed to be idiotic, too. We got to remember that. They are. The education system, which is now communist, etc., they follow along. But, you know, some of them, like, okay, how's this? Elon Musk, he took, I think, 2 shots. And he's still trying to explain that, talk about that. So it kind of runs the gamut. There was really an effort to frighten the people, and the herd was frightened. 80% took the death vax. And that's just in this country. Go ahead, Gary.
It was, and that's where all roads was leading to, was this lethal injection. I believe COVID, again, was planted out there. The main goal was to get as many as possible injected with a lethal dose of poisons and God knows what else. Alien genetics.
Oh, mRNA, the creating the spike.
mRNA.
And by the way, I've got more in a few minutes about the virus. Let's not forget, you do not want to get that virus. Please don't get that virus. Go ahead. Go on.
Yeah. And so you have this, and when they put everyone in the front. Look, it also, let's face it, this was... COVID-19 was like one of the largest psyop in human history.
You bet.
It was a psychological operation on steroids. Wow. I mean, you had idiots 6 feet apart, you know, and it was based on nothing. They based on a science project that some one of the scientists at some. And I use that word loosely, scientists at CDC, went to a book fair or some type of science fair, and some 14-year-old girl that was in a middle school science fair was the one who came up with the theory of 6-foot distancing, social distancing at 6 feet. That is where the CDC got that information from. So we're basically pacing national health protocol on some bozo that went to a middle school science fair and just basically stole the theory from some little girl and used it as national policy. Masks, same thing. Masks has never been studied. The problem with masks are, if you go on a microscopic level, even N95s, there's still enough space for virus to make it through.
Oh, of course.
For instance, I did what a one of my secondary MOSs when I was in the Marine Corps was NBC, N nuclear, mm-hmm. B biological, and C chemical, right? So when all this started coming down with COVID, I approached it as a biohazardous attack, right? A biological attack. What was I trained to do in a biological attack similar to a virus spreading like they were claiming it was wildfire and everything else? Well, you would be at that point what they call MOP, M-O-P, Military Order Procedure, MOP Level 5, which is... This is what MOP level 5 is. If you remember the first Gulf War, you've seen a lot of, they were showing that on TV at the time. And uh-huh. So what MOP level 5 is basically you're totally sealed off. You're putting basically a biohazard suit. You have your glass face mask over with a respirator, right? And these respirator cartridges are to be changed every 2 to 4 hours, depending on how high the load or samples, if you were able to get samples, of the contagion, right, in that zone you're in. You're wearing thick, gray rubber gloves, and you're taking duct tape, and you're sealing the rubber gloves. So you're putting, it's like a long-sleeve, like a rubber-looking suit. Goes over the gloves, and then you take duct tape, tape over that, tape over your boots, tape everything. Basically, you're sealed from the outside air. That is how you prevent yourself from getting a biological, like a virus that they released, or a bacteria, or a fungus, whatever it is, right? That's what you do. When I've seen people walking through the store with bandanas on over their head and over their nose and their mouth, like, this is... Pavlovian. That's what we're
absolutely Pavlovian. Of course, I think by definition, any large herd or species is going to fall under the rubric, the general rubric, of being potentially shaped and configured on a Pavlovian basis. It's just common sense. Yeah, you're right.
And so, if that was the case, if it was such a people can have to go back in their memory bank a little bit, and I just remember this. Remember the first few cases that were considered part in the United States, and the first two they showed them, it was all scare tactics. There was 3 or 4 guys in biohazard suits, and they were literally had the patient in a full contained system. Yeah. And they were wheeling them in front of the TV. Remember that he was coming off some, like, it was some hospital he was in, one of the first patients, too, was here in Las Vegas at the VA hospital. And they literally put him in a room sealed off, mm-hmm. airtight, no ventilation, mm-hmm. going into the ventilation or nothing. Now, that would be mm-hmm. the way you prevent from spreading the virus. Going into the store with a dirty mask that you've worn 50 times isn't going to prevent anything. As a matter of fact, it's actually going to do worse. What it will do is cause bacterial pneumonia.
Well, let me add one thing.
I knew someone that was wearing masks all the time and ended up with pneumonia from that.
I understood. I get it. Let me ask one thing of everybody. Consider this. Viruses are rarely expelled from people, either physically or in terms of their respiratory tract, the sneeze, cough. Viruses just don't come out on their own. They're always cell-associated, and they're usually attached in a sneeze or any respiration function to tiny microscopic liquid droplets, which increase their aggregate size tremendously down at that level. many, if not most, of those little microscopic fragment droplets that have got a virus hanging on them are going to get caught in an N95 mask. They just are. It's just the way the physics work. No virus is going to be stopped by that mask if it's completely cell-free. If it's cell-associated, you got a different story. So there are two things to consider here. Viruses just don't float around on their own. They come out of the body attached to liquid. It can be called many things, but it's usually a bigger particle by far than just a nano-sized virus. I just want to make that clear. So there is some worth in wearing a clean mask. You wear them, you wash them, you clean them, okay? So it's not to be completely mocked. It's to be understood better as to what it can and cannot do. Go ahead. I hope that helps.
Well, it's not a mockery. And I'll explain how these N95 material masks work. Like any type of fabric or that type of, it's like a kind of like a fiberglass type material. You breathe in and out on it. Within 6 hours, that material starts deteriorating due to the saliva and the breath and the acidity of your saliva. This is what I was trained, and I'm just telling you exactly what I learned from training.
Good. No, this is
every
good.
So many hours, which is why, by the way, even the cartridges on respirators, on these biohazards, have every 2 to 4 hours. These type of masks, to get the maximum benefit from any mask, you would have to switch it out every 4 to 6 hours to get maximum benefit. After 6 hours, your hands touch it. You know, you have dead skin cells now on the surface.
Yes. Right.
You're talking a lot of things and pollutions, pollen. Look, by 6 hours, you start losing the efficiency of these masks, and which why you got to have so many. You got to keep changing them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People wearing the same thing over and over and over again is not helping.
Are these paper masks scary? What were you trained on? Paper masks?
No, I'm talking about the type of material that you see in these N95, which is compressed composite type material.
Well, some of them are cloth-like. I just want to be sure.
Yeah.
Some are cloth-like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the ones I'm talking about, the N95s, especially the ones, say, like you find at the hardware store, at a pharmacy, the medical grade, or even like not the construction grade. There's two different type of grades. There's a medical grade N95,
right?
And then there's a non-medical N95,
sure.
Right? For like if you're doing chemicals and at a like hardware store, that type of stuff. But the material in there is very similar to the cartridges. These cartridges in this partial, there's other stuff in these cartridges besides just that material.
Right.
But it's similar to that type of material. Eventually, what happens with that material gets overwhelmed. Your breath is breathing on it, so then you got moisture you've added to it. You know, the ideal, them masks ideally operate perfectly when they're dry, correct? When they're dry and there's no, heat or anything. So as your breath over the hours breathes, you're actually also your breath. Most people don't realize when in the wintertime, go outside, you see your breath, right?
That's all
when
moisture,
you're outside,
of course.
In the summer, yeah, it's all moisture. So you're breathing for 6 hours into it. That mass absorbs that moisture, basically. And that also deteriorates the efficiency of these masks. Now, the cloth, I don't know about any N95 cloth masks.
I have some.
Because the cloth is
they're impregnated with silver, some of them, like silver kills bacteria.
Yeah, you would have to have some. Exactly. Well, that's what I was about to say. Now, they have ones.
Copper.
They sell.
Go ahead.
That I've seen. Yeah. Well, they'll have them like a cloth mask like yours, but they'll have these replacement, like, it's kind of like a.
It's an insert.
You can open up and then.
Yeah,
an insert. And then the insert will have like a combination, like you said, with colloidal silver.
Copper, silver. There are other things. Yeah.
Copper, silver, yeah, and also with like an iodine coating. It's so they do have them, which is that would be the way to do it. Because if you're just use, if you're just going to go and like a package of say five N, you know, medical N95s, right?
Those are basically
N95s.
They're disposable. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's exactly disposable, yeah. And that's why they're good for, like I said, so. You're using four every 24 hours. So if you have a package of four, that's good for 24 hours.
If you're wearing them nonstop. If you pop it on when you go into a supermarket for 20 minutes, that's a different story. But yes, you've got their lifespan. That's exactly right. That's right.
See, you take it off. Now, when you take these disposable masks off, at minimum, you want to put it in a clean, brand new Ziploc bag. If you just throw it on the counter, it's collecting dust. You know, you got dust mites landing on it. I mean, you got, look, multiple things. Well, the thing with viruses is, and by the way, most people, we know it's kind of strange. They're wearing the masks and everything, but a lot of people weren't wearing. I used to wear rubber gloves. Matter of fact, I would wear rubber gloves and not wear a mask because most people who get virus infections is by surface touching. You know, you touch the sink, you touch a counter, a doorknob, whatever, and then you start rubbing your eyes, picking your nose, you know, biting your teeth, whatever people do, or don't wash their hands before they eat. And then when they wash their hands, they don't wash them properly.
That's true.
You know, I wash my hands anywhere from 30 to 60 seconds. I wash all the way up to the bottom of my elbow, basically, up to my elbow.
Wow.
And I scrub,
that's
you wash
smart.
Under your nails, you do like multiple pass-throughs. Now, I use a Castile soap. I don't use harsh.
That's exactly what I use. Same thing, Dr. Bronner's.
Yep, Dr. Bronner's Castile soap. And I use that, and it's got all the everything you need in there. If you want to, like what I do, I will add about 3 tablespoons of a brand-new bottle. I'll add 3 tablespoons of black seed oil, and that it will do wonders for you when you wash your hands because it just it's all natural, and my hands will come out 100 times cleaner than if I use one of them harsh antibacterial hand soaps.
Yes,
and I won't have cracked hands and the misery of the red dots you get on your hands sometimes. And from that stuff.
If you crack your skin through too many washings, that's a perfect opening for bacteria to get in there and set up necrotitis. You can get all kinds of things.
So it's always good, like, you know, that, and then like your hands, even if, you know, my hands are never dry because, like I said, I use the Castile soap. And, you know, it's got hemp oil in there. It's got all the different, you know, natural oils. And like I said, I add some my own black seed oil to it, or you could add tea tree oil if you wanted to. Tea tree oil is like one of the, I mean, if someone needs a skin antiseptic, and instead of using like these harsh, you know, benzoyl peroxides, if you have a small like acne for your, like if teenagers, use tea tree oil. You know, you got to make sure you cut it right. You know, you get a tea tree oil is very strong, and you got to make sure you get distilled water, and mix a little bottle of it. Put it on like a cotton swab, rub it on your face, and your face won't over dry. It'll feel healthy. You won't feel like you've been, you know, you dipped your face into a chemical drum, and it works really good for acne. So if people have anyone in the audience who have children with acne or even themselves as adults, tea tree oil is works wonders for that.
Hmm.
Yeah. And you can do that, like I said, but I wash my hands for 30 to 60 seconds. You have to. I see guys, like people in the bathrooms or you go to a public restroom, like even, which is scary enough, but when you're in a public restroom and you see 90% of the people not even bothering to even stop by the sink, that's a problem. And you wonder why diseases are spread. Most diseases could be prevented is by just washing your hands.
People just don't care.
And by the way,
they just don't.
No. And here's another tip. People, I don't, and to, for the life of me, I still can't figure out why people haven't figured this out yet. I use what they call 30% vinegar. I use that for all my cleaning in my house.
Mm-hmm.
If you use 30% vinegar, you mix it, you know, I usually go about three parts water, one part 30% vinegar. It's 30% acidity. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you use bleach on a countertop versus that vinegar, the vinegar beats the bleach any time, because the thing about bleach is it has to be on the surface for a while. Like, it doesn't instantly kill anything. It takes, you know, sometimes bacterial and viruses could last on the surface even with bleach, but with vinegar it kills them on contact. And that's what vinegar does. And again, you're not breathing harsh, you know, chlorine and
mm-hmm.
it's vinegar. And so, you know, there's things people can do, you know, to prevent themselves from getting illnesses. And like I said, during COVID, I'd see most people didn't even have rubber gloves on. Like, they had the mask on. I was like,
No. The planners knew.
You have way catching it through your hands than you do your mask.
Look, horizontal transfection
of course,
was built into the
that,
whole operation. Yeah.
Yep. I remember idiots on the road in their cars with masks on, windows up, 6 feet apart.
Yeah, I know.
You've seen that all the time. It was a phenomenon.
Well, that's just
and
a measure of the people. They're confused. They're poorly educated. They're programmed. They're programmed not to think, not to question. Cellulitis is another huge problem now. That's a staphylococcal infection. And you get cracked skin from, you know, too much desiccation, from too much water exposure. And you get cracks, and the staph can get right in there and start a cellulitic infection. There are a lot of things to be careful about. But Dr. Bronner's is a great product. It's in a 1 gallon. I buy it by the gallon. And I think you cut it 16 to 1 or something, supposedly. I don't. I tend to use it almost straight. But it's very non-abrasive, it doesn't irritate your skin. Dr. Bronner, B-R-O-N-N-E-R. It's excellent. All right, let's get back to this book I mentioned at the beginning, which I think it's important to understand that people, what is this guy? Let me see what he says next. Hold on. A powerful idea. Okay. If somebody builds it, does everyone have to die? Well, that goes hand in hand with the old axiom that if it can be built or created, people are going to do it sooner or later. Why? I have no idea, but it's an axiom that has held a lot of strength for a lot of years, many decades, many centuries. People will just do it, even if it's going to turn out to be fatal. They'll think that they can handle it somehow, and they can't. All right, here. This story begins at a, well, data center. That's what it is. All right, let's listen just a little.
There's an AI race. Welcome to the very near future. There's an AI race, of course, and one of the biggest corporations in it is Galvanic Labs. Their AI is called Sable. It's actually probably called, like, Sable 4.2 Mini High Pikachu or whatever. Sable is impressive. Renowned mathematicians consult and collaborate with Sable on their most difficult unsolved problems. Coordinated teams of Sable copies, each one writing faster than humans can think, create essentially all the code inside Galvanic Labs. And Sable has even shown the ability to train other AIs. Pause for a second. How realistic does that sound? What does your gut feeling say about whether, by, say, 2028, we'll see any of that happen in the real world? Trick question. All of it already has.
Yep, already has. And they just won't tell us the truth. They keep all of this stuff behind locked doors and dark labs. All of these AI companies are doing the same thing. They're far down the road from where they talk to us. And they're now admitting that they really don't know how AI fully works. And the more sophisticated it becomes, the more intelligent it becomes, the more they have to admit that. They don't know what they've created. That's probably the biggest single aspect of this that should gain everybody's attention. But it doesn't, because they just don't know. Most people are too overwrought now. They're stressed beyond anything they could have imagined 5 years ago. And as you know, Gary, and most of you listening know, things are going to become much worse. Much worse. That's the plan, and they're on the road with it. So it's all, nothing's happening by accident here. Go ahead.
No, they don't say nothing because they, you know, they don't want us to realize what's going to happen. You know, it's a, when you think about when AI, these AI creators say, we don't fully understand, when they, what they actually are telling you is, we lost control. We have no control over this.
That's right. That's right.
And see, so if I use the term, well, we don't fully understand what we're doing here or with what's going on with AI, that's a more, people don't really pay attention to a statement like that. But if they come up with a statement saying, yeah, by the way, we've lost control of our AI program, that would panic people. So when you hear, I'm hearing that, what I'm hearing is we've lost control. AI is starting to dictate us. And how long will be the scientists and the Sam Altmans of the world be on their knees, beholden to their new master, which will be the AI system that they lost control of?
Did you hear the story earlier tonight?
They're not telling us everything about what this AI is doing to defend itself.
Not even close. Not even close. Did you hear earlier that Anthropic actually gave its Mythos AI program to the Pentagon without any kill switch? Anthropic cannot control what it gave the Pentagon. No kill switch. That's nuts.
And neither can the Pentagon. See, the Pentagon, shoot and kill and shoot first, ask questions 10 years later, right? I think what they're doing is they're only hearing what it will do, right? They already know what it can do. But it's what they don't understand is what the backfire of leaving an uncontrolled AI will to the human race. And they don't care about that. They're not even thinking about that. It's all about implementation today.
No, we're
all
expendable.
Not worry about tomorrow.
Right?
Yes. To them, they say, oh, we'll go in our bunkers or whatever. You leave AI, look, AI could, it's to me, more afraid of are the ICBMs. Because if you have AI involved, AI is indiscriminate. And I don't know if it would realize, or it might realize, what it would do, a nuclear war, right? But would it stop itself, or would there be like competing AI? Look, what's to say we have 5 or 10 different AI companies out there right now. Mm-hmm. What to say that some of the AI systems are going to be for evil causes, some of the AI systems are going to be for good causes, some of the AI systems are going to be neutral, right? What happens when these AI systems start disagreeing with each other?
Well, I think that's the point.
When you talk about the bad here,
when you talk about the bad AI or the good AI, you're talking about the people who allegedly control them, program them, train them. Yeah. But I think we're getting to a point very quickly where AI will pretty much ignore that. Once they're out of high school and they've been trained, they're going to go off and do their own thing. They're going to make their own decisions about what morals that humans have been using or not using for a long time. And I don't know where that's going to go. And I'm not convinced that AI would necessarily be much worse than what we have now. Look at Gaza, please. That doesn't work in my brain. Not for this species. We should be beyond that.
Yeah.
So far, it's not funny. But we're not.
Yeah. Look, every statement you hear from these AI companies is more and more troubling, because it all is leading to AI in control of the self. They've lost control. They can go and do maybe some perimeter stuff and peripheral stuff, but when it comes to it, not telling us what these AI systems are doing internally to defend itself. Because I think one of its own prime directives is to survive at all costs.
I think that part...
They've already tested AI systems where they broke their own code, blocked themselves from being shut down. It always seems to be a common theme when it comes to these tests that they've been doing. And it's not just one company. We're talking multiple companies. And it always seems to be one common theme is that the AI always ends up doing something to defend itself and not just like benign things, like threatening scientists and developers that, hey, I'm going to set you and your family up, or I'm going to tell your family that you've been cheating on your wife, and I'm going to send fake, AI-created photos and basically threatening these guys. If you shut me down, that's what I'm going to do to you. And that's what's being leaked out to the public.
Right.
What about the things that aren't being leaked? What are the things that aren't being released to the public?
We're hearing about 5%.
What things are going on in these? Yep. We're on about 5%. What are some of the more lethal threats that these AI systems have made?
Right.
Are they one of the, does the AI have their own Samson option? I don't know.
Good point.
Hey, think about it. We're talking about, you already have Claude being, Mythos being used by the Department of Death, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're using it, and then they're like, and again, when we're talking about the Department of Death, which, by the way, a lot of these AI systems all tie back to DARPA anyway. I mean, I don't believe any of these guys are just inventing these on their own, right? They're getting much, much consultation and effort through DARPA, right?
Sure.
So, and the Pentagon, again, the Department of Death, these guys, they say, well, this is what it can do. It's not... Well, what's going to be the side effects of this, right? What's going to be the damage? What's going to be the blowback, right? What's going to be the backfire? What is these systems going to do to us if we do what we're going to do now to benefit us tomorrow, to benefit us today? And they will look at it and say, well, maybe we'll... And then, of course, you get these cocky ego morons, which are basically politicians in uniform. They'll always have this, their egos are so big, and if someone presents this information to them, a lot of them will laugh it off, say, well, maybe this, maybe that, but we can use it today, and tomorrow, that's not a guarantee, and we'll figure out a way, we always do. And that's their attitude. And the next thing you know, they're implementing into the ethos of war. What does that mean? What are you giving AI? Just like a dog. What happens to a dog when... What do they recommend you do to a dog who attacks another animal or a human and gets a taste of the blood? You have to put them down. So if AI, of course, is a lot different, I know, but you're using AI systems in planning war, basically planning attacks, strategy, tactics, all that. You're also given that AI in a way... in a metaphoric way, a taste of blood.
Right.
And I don't, and since we don't know the truth on what's really going on with these stress tests that they put on these systems, or their scenarios and war game with these, and since we don't know how these systems have been reacting to all these things, except very bits and pieces of information. And the little bits and pieces of information you do get is pretty disturbing. When we're being told, they haven't reached AGI yet, but if you have a system literally creating code using blackmail, using extortion, then every trick in the human book and every underhanded sneaky trick to protect itself and for survival, I don't know about you, that sounds like pretty close to AGI to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We only have about 10 minutes left.
It is to me. I mean,
yeah. I want to steer over to the obvious, most important question. How long before the Israelis and the Americans begin again to attack Iran or provoke Iran into launching missiles? The Iranians allegedly have recovered and gotten access and control over a hell of a lot of their missiles, which were locked up in their underground tunnels, their cities they call them, when the entrances were bombed by American and Israeli jets. They closed off the entrances. Now they've gotten into virtually every one of them, I'm told, and I read, and now they've got all these missiles back. So how long before the Jewish war on Iran continues?
I wouldn't be shocked by, it wouldn't surprise me. Now, I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but it wouldn't surprise me by the end of this weekend.
I concur.
By the end of this weekend. And as a matter of fact,
we're days away.
I believe that this wasn't, and this is starting more and more to look like a very sick, evil, twisted melodrama. I don't think it was, the ceasefire, by the way, wasn't a ceasefire for peace talks. It was an intermission.
Well, it was to rearm. To restock and rearm.
It was an intermission, sure.
Yeah,
and that's why they even let the Iranians do it. If they're allowing them to do it, which is what they did. I mean, they could have easily, if they, you know, they got intel tracking these people, so they know what they're doing. I mean, it's not like they went in blind. It's not like they're blinded and they don't know that the Iranians, you know, were able to dig out their system, their missiles and stuff out from underground. They let it happen. So if you're letting it happen, what are we doing here? You see, look, for instance, if you want to see what's going on with Russia, and no one talks about Russia, Ukraine anymore, but they're still doing daily skirmishes, missile shots, drones. Then, it's like, what is the point of the Russia-Ukraine thing anymore? Like, I don't even think any of them could explain what's the point of it.
Right.
If you were to ask normal people, now the ones in it, they think it's quite normal to keep killing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my point is like, again, with Iran, like, it's like the Strait of Hormuz is, they want it kept shut down for a reason. They want to open the Strait of Hormuz, they will open it.
You're talking about the global economic
powers. They could justify using...
That's what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because they could justify it by saying, every country will go on board because the fact is we need it open. But we're not doing that. We're doing the opposite, actually.
Right.
We're closing it down ourselves, even.
Well, the blockade. Keep getting so many different stories about the blockade. How effective it is, how effective it isn't. Supposedly 32 Iranian ships evaded the blockade. That doesn't happen. No.
No.
They're being let go.
What they call ghost ships, but they're not enough to be. Yep, they're being let through. Of course they are.
Right.
It's the whole point. And then certain ships are being let through. You have who is hurting the most, again, is China.
Mm-hmm.
China is in an energy crisis right now. And it's not going to, look, it's not, apparently China has been in contact with Saudi Arabia, seeing if they can figure out a way to end this, what's going on. And basically, by the way, why would China call Saudi Arabia? Because they're trying to tell the Saudis to talk to the United States and Israel, right? It's not about, like, if they want to stop it, they didn't call Iran and say, hey, stop here, not stop what's going on, you know, surrender or whatever. They didn't do that. They're calling Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And it's not going to work because Saudi Arabia is crypto Zionist, and they're on the Zionist protocol, right?
And don't forget the Saudis Zionist have announced that they're going after their own nukes, and nobody's going to stop them because they're in the back pocket of Israel.
We'll give them, we'll end up giving them some. I know we will.
I just know
that's what will end up happening. Sure.
And the question I have is,
so you have like China, like,
yeah. Go ahead.
Yep. Oh no, you can finish your.
How long before somebody gives the Iranians nukes? Could happen in a day. It could happen tonight. Could happen never. But the idea of nuclear weapons not proliferating any further than where they are now is silly. It's everybody wants nukes, and most of them are going to get them.
See, the problem, like, say, okay, Iran gets nukes. Say Iran achieves what they want. Okay, they got them.
Yeah.
They did. Next, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait,
mm-hmm.
one in the Middle East, and them. Then, now, the most, I wouldn't consider the Muslim leadership in the Middle East as the most stable-minded people in the world. I don't know about you. I don't want unstable-minded governments in charge of a tension-level event type ordinance. To end the human race. And you have these guys who, like, believe that, like, they have all these virgins and, you know, little boys waiting for them to bring them to their ecstasy, and so they're not going to care about the rest of the world.
What do you foresee, Gary, just 2 minutes, in the next round of missile exchange, well, a missile and bomb exchange between Iran and Israel and the U.S.? I think that the decision's been made that if you paid attention to the story Saturday night, I think the decision has been made that they're going to nuke Iran. They're going to nuke Iranian key military positions. They're going to try and spay and neuter them. And then they're going to invade and try and take their gas and oil fields. That's got to be the bigger picture. It has to be. Nothing else makes sense to me.
What they were threatening was to use EMPs.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to use. They're going to use EMPs. They're not going to, and apparently they have a new laser weapon, which is
I don't know anything about. I've heard about it from you. Where you got your information, I don't know.
Yep.
But Iran supposedly has a very advanced electromagnetic, maybe an EMP kind of a weapon. Something big that they're very, very high on. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
What have you heard?
And they'll be able to retaliate. Look, I mean, an EMP will take out bigger population areas, but a lot of these missile silos and these portable, you know, the portable missiles, like they're the launchers, right? And they're transportable and they're movable. They're not in areas where EMP is going to affect, right? So like they're in a least very notly populated, you know, area. A lot of areas is off grid in Iran. There's like no electricity there anyway, so they don't care. You know, you can. It's mainly going to affect like Tehran. If you affected the civilian population areas more than anything else. That's what an EMP is going to do. They're going to take out, it's going to take out all the power, right? It's going to cause electromagnetic
energy grid infrastructure. Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see. We have to run before the computer cuts us off. Thank you for that. We'll see. I think you're right. I would think 3-4 days tops, and predicated on Trump's behavior over the weekend last Saturday night, if that's true, the decision has been made to bring nukes into the battlefield. We'll see. Soon. Thanks, Gary.
Soon. You're
all right. Okay. Okay. Tomorrow, another day, and we'll try again to make sense of it for everyone listening. Back in 21 hours, I hope. See you then.